but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a 0.08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a 0.08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
But since we're in Vegas, you know, it seems like the right time to say it. As you know, our theme for this team is double down. Right? We have done an unbelievable job of building this team over time. You look at our success season to season, and as this team has grown, the process works.
Hard to disagree with that, and that process led to 13-0 and a Big Ten championship in year one in the conference. The Rose Bowl did happen. That was a thing. But the 13 other data points were nice for Dan Lanning in year three. Now it's year four. Expectations are still high. Predicted to finish third in the Big Ten, though, behind Penn State and Ohio State. Ted LaRue covers all things Oregon football on That Show Out West, a podcast about that team out west, the Oregon Ducks, on the On3 Network, and Scoop Duck contributor as well. Ted joins us on the Bald-Faced Truth. Judah will be filling in. Ted, it's great to meet you virtually. How are you?
I'm great, man. We had media days today on the West Coast and Las Vegas. We've got, 5 weeks or so until this thing kicks off against the defending FCS runner-ups. I'm ready to go. I'm fired up. I'm ready to put on the helmet, the pads. I'm ready to talk some Duck football today.
That's what it's all about, man. I love your energy and the vibes that you bring to your program. Tell us about the iteration of your program, and I know it's a little bit newer, but it's always a fun listen. For those that haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, what are you bringing to the table?
Yeah, we've been going on since January, and I feel like I bring a little bit of a neutral observer's. You know, I was kind of doing stuff on the Big Ten side and covering Big Ten football. And then throughout the middle of the year last year, got some Duck fans to nudge me and be like, you know, you might want to think about covering this team a little bit independently. I've been following this team since 2007, you know, the game against Michigan and the great performance by Dennis Dixon, Jonathan Stewart, and all those guys back then. And, you know, like I said, the fans were nudging me a little bit and then kind of contributing and writing and doing some stuff over with Scoop Duck, a part of On3, and now Rivals together. And it's all just kind of snowballed. And yeah, since January, we've been doing this show, and it's a lot of people have kind of tuned in, really good response. And it's been the most fun maybe I've had in my media career. So I've been having a blast for sure.
2007 Michigan game. I mean, that is an iconic game in the history of the program. Are you still saying program or are you saying program? Where do you come out on this?
I need to get on the program train because I hear Dan say it in his pressers every single time. You know, I'm kind of more of a northern guy, and that's kind of more of a little bit of a southern thing a little bit. So I need to get that twang maybe going on a little bit more. But, you know, if it's good enough for Dan, it's good enough for me.
Yeah, see, I appreciate that, but I'm the other way. I say, I'm from Oregon. Like, we're not going to say program here. We could be a program and still be successful, but you definitely love the vibes that Dan Lanning's bringing into the table. Now, we played the cut at the top. He takes his stage in Vegas, day two here of Big Ten Media Days, and he's saying, we're doubling down. We're doubling down on our process. The results have been good so far. We're going to double down on that. Thought that was a kind of a nice theme to go with, especially with the Vegas assimilation. How did that come across to you, and what do you think about the themes for this upcoming Oregon season?
Oh yeah, like I said, they're so invested. Like he said, I'm glad he said the process of really what they've been able to build over these last few years. I mean, they've just improved year by year. You know, he comes in 2022, you go 10-3, you get that Holiday Bowl win against North Carolina. Okay, 2023, you know, you kind of jump up, and then you have that Fiesta Bowl victory. And then last year, of course, first year in the Big Ten, winning 13 games, the win total just goes up each and every single year that he's the head coach. And, you know, back-to-back top five recruiting classes. Maybe we'll talk about it here in a little bit, but there's so much of those Dan Lanning recruited guys that there's going to be more than we've really seen in previous years on this roster. And these are guys that they believe in, remembered after the spring game, the linebacker room, he's like, we're not going to the portal because we believe in our guys. And that comes down to doubling down on the process of everybody that they've recruited and everybody that they believe in, from the players to the personnel, to the coaching staff. You know, there's just so much belief of what they're doing within this program. It's not surprising that that's really the theme of what they're doing this year. And he exuded a lot of confidence at the podium today. And when you got a young team like that, you know, sometimes we'll go up there, some coaches will go up there and say, hey, we're a little bit young. You know, they'll kind of maybe be a little bit standoffish. But Dan's a confident guy, and he's confident in his team, and that's what you love to see.
And the two guys on defense that he brought with him are good examples of that, with Bryce Betcher and Mateo Uiagalelei. What are your expectations for those guys on the defensive side of the ball this year?
Well, Bryce Betcher, he's the heart and soul of this team, man. I mean, coming from Eugene, double walk-on, baseball, football, we know the story. And he said it in many interviews this offseason. He's like, you know, that Rose Bowl left a sour taste in my mouth. Hey, could I have gone out and played baseball, start my minor league career, and eventually start working my way up to the majors? Yeah, he could have. But this kid is, that's the type of heart and soul kid that just grew up in this area and being a Duck fan through and through. And then, like, that's the type of guy you need, that middle linebacker, put the eye black on kind of guy as well. And then you look at Mateo leading the Big Ten in sacks last season. I think he's one of the, you know, with some of those great pass rushers at Ohio State not there anymore, at Penn State not there anymore, I think he probably is the Big Ten's best pass rusher, or at least one of the guys that is in that conversation as well. Like, he could be, like, this whole defense. I mean, you got a guy like Tatum Tuioti on the other side that's going to draw some attention as well. Blake Purchase is a guy that I'm extremely high on. When you have this much depth coming off the edge, Mateo, I think, is going to get a lot of one-on-one matchups. And he's probably going to win a lot of those one-on-one matchups against opposing tackles in the Big Ten Conference. I'm really excited out of Mateo Uiagalelei specifically, and what he can do from a pass rush standpoint. We know how important it is in college football and to be able to get after the passer. There's a reason why some of these edge rushers coming out of high school are commanding the price that they are, some of these guys in the portal, because that position is so important. I think the Ducks got one of the best around in Mateo, certainly.
It will be interesting to see how that impacts the secondary as well, because as, to your point, for as well as Oregon has been able to recruit and develop, the secondary has been a little bit more portal reliant. And but one player in particular at that safety position, the Thieneman kid out of Purdue, he seems to be a pretty exciting talent. What do you make of that part of the defense in particular?
That's the part where we talk about doubling down, and we talk about, hey, all of this recruited talent. You know, it's like, hey, we've heard so much on these December early signing days, hey, you signed that 5-star kid and this 4-star kid. And sometimes you don't really, now after that day, you don't really hear about it a little bit. Maybe a lot of fans, it kind of drifts out of their mind a little bit. Well, you're going to hear those names now. You're going to hear the Ife Obadegwu at corner. You're going to hear about Aaron Flowers in safety. You're going to hear about Kingston Lopa at safety. Now you're going to start to really hear, it's a really young group, and having an experienced guy like Dylan Thieneman, who had a fantastic freshman year and a fantastic sophomore year at Purdue, but specifically a freshman All-American year a couple of years ago. He had 6 interceptions. He carried the defense on his back. I mean, like, he was that defense. They asked him to do so much. I don't think that this Oregon defense is going to ask him to do as much. He was almost a quasi-linebacker at times in that Boilermakers defense over there. But having, and I've heard this in multiple these press conferences during the spring and from multiple people, is he is the first one in there. He is the last one to leave. He is showing what it really means to be a professional and the work ethic. And that, I think, is really important. When you have this much youth, these many impressionable guys that be like, hey, what do we have to do to take it to that extra level so I can become an NFL draft pick? Dylan Thieneman, it sounds like, is certainly setting that standard right now in that defensive back room. And that's impressive for a transfer to be able to come in there a couple of months in, you get into spring ball, and to be that type of leader right away. I think it really speaks to the character of Dylan Thieneman. And I think it really speaks to the player. Like, this is, you know, you got to probably go back to someone like Javon Holland to find a safety this talented. And look, we know in the secondary, how have these Duck seasons end? Look, they could not, they couldn't contain Jeremiah Smith and this Ohio State pass game last year. Look at the last couple of years, 2 years ago, twice against Washington, couldn't cover Roma Dunze, couldn't cover these guys on the outside for UW. So you needed great secondary play. And I think, like, even though a lot of the other parts of the secondary are really young, I think the talent is there, right? Chris Hampton talked about it. He's the defensive backs coach during the spring. He's like, height, weight, speed. You're starting to see a taller and a longer type of defensive back. And I think you're going to really start to see that start to pay off in the secondary. I think this is a really good group, although maybe a little bit inexperienced outside of Seaneman.
Ted LaRoe covers the Ducks. Saw that show out west, about that team out west. Now, Thieneman is probably my most exciting, you know, defensive player to watch this year. Mm-hmm. That Mateo is right up there, though, too. I think Mateo's going to be incredible this year. Offensively, I'm pumped about Kenyon Sadiq, except now it seems like everybody's pumped about Kenyon Sadiq. He's no longer like this fun little piece. He's like this mega superstar before week one comes around. But I got to say, what are your expectations and your thoughts about this playmaker at the tight end position?
Oh, I freaking love that guy. I am so excited to see him. There was a time, I think, during the spring, maybe it was like February or March, where I think I talked about Kenyon Sadiq like 3 or 4 shows in a row. Like, that's how much I love this guy. And you kind of look back. I remember he got when that Fiesta Bowl game against Liberty a couple of years ago. I think he got the ball in like a sweep or something, and he took it into the end. You've seen flashes these last couple of years. Of course, the Big Ten championship game last season. Like, man, this guy, he is just an athletic freak. He put on 10 pounds of muscle, I believe, during this offseason. Like, he's sitting there at like 250 type of pounds, and this guy can absolutely run like a deer out there. He's a matchup nightmare. He, plain and simple, you put a linebacker or a safety on him, he's going to run past him with his athleticism. You put a smaller guy on him, like a corner, he's going to use his size to be able to kind of win some of those arm battles and to be able to get open. And now without Evan Stewart, this is where something I think really gets unique and maybe tests the creativity of Will Stein and how he's going to set up some of these formations. We saw Terrence Ferguson and Sadiq both kind of lined up in the slot and out wide last year. If there is a lot of faith, and I think from the people I'm talking to, there is a lot of faith in Jamari Johnson, the tight end transfer that came in, I think you could see more of Sadiq kind of out wide a little bit, right? I think you get his athleticism out in space, right? Dan Lanning said it today. He's like, yeah, I was playing with my son on a new CFB 26 video game, and basically he kind of continued with his quote, and he's like, to the quarterbacks, he said, throw it to Kenyon. Get Kenyon the ball. Will Stein, when he's done some of these seminars, he's all about hashtag feeding the studs. And there's no question about it. Kenyon Sadiq is a stud. So I think, you know, of course you got Tecorian Moore coming in. I think those are your top two weapons. I'm so excited because he is just a matchup nightmare. If I'm a defensive coordinator, I don't know what I do with him. And I think you're really going to see him be at that Brock Bowers type of level possibly this year. I think you're only going to have him for 1 year. I honestly believe that. They're talking first round already with this kid. I think he's going to have 1 year under his belt, and that's going to be it. And of course, we're hoping that it's going to be a hell of a year.
All right. Well, let's talk Trigger Man. Let's talk QB. is Oregon a team that goes so far as Dante Moore can take them? And what are your thoughts on the Austin Novosad role in all of this?
Boy, that is a great question, to see how far exactly Dante Moore can take them this year. Like, that's that's the question. That's a $64,000 question a little bit. Now, there is, of course, the quarterback battle that people are talking about right now. I'm very curious to see how public, if maybe public at all, that people come out and say, hey, Dante Moore, if Dan Lanning comes out and says Dante Moore is our guy, or if it's just internal, you know. So I'm very curious. I think, you know, they wanted this to be a quarterback battle, right? So they didn't lose, you know, some really talented a talented option as the backup quarterback in Austin Novosad, right? A lot of it, they've done such a great job with retention, right? You want to be able to retain as much talent as possible, especially a quarterback. And then to have someone to be able to push Dante a little bit, allowing him to maybe get better a little bit, saying, hey, nothing's guaranteed here. And now that pushes him to the next level. I think that's important why Austin's a really good talent. Like, that's the thing I think that gets lost on a lot of people, is like, oh yeah, Dante's going to be the quarterback. You heard the questions today at Media Day. Everybody's talking Dante. But, you know, but Austin's a really good player. It's just, you know, Dante's arm talent is generational. Like, that's just what it is. So I'm very curious to where he stands as a leader. I'm very curious to where he stands in terms of, you know, when you get late in the game, maybe you're not playing your best. You're on the road at Penn State, for example, in a whiteout at the end of September, and you need to make a 3rd-and-8 throw down the middle and thread the needle. Is he a guy that can engineer that drive late in the season? I don't know. That's, I think, a big X factor to see how far this thing can go, because all of the returns say this guy has as much arm talent as we've seen. I think he's got a higher ceiling than Bo Nix. I think he's got a higher ceiling than 1 year of Dylan Gabriel. Then you can get into the conversations of the, you know, the Justin Herberts of the world. And I know Double M is sitting out there, 2014 out there. Don't want to maybe get quite into that, Ted. That's some pretty rarefied air, certainly in Eugene. But I think he's got all the chops to maybe eventually get to that level.
Well, and yet, Ted, any quarterback with that level of talent and that level of pedigree still needs confidence, right? They need to see. The ball go through the hoop a little bit. And I think about the start of last season and being 45 plus point favorites against Idaho, and you look up at 17-14 midway through the fourth quarter. Everyone's talking about that Penn State game, but how much are you also circling, look, FCS runners up, Montana State and Oklahoma State? Like, these are important reps to see the guys actually do the job out there early.
Montana State's a good football program. I know there's a lot of people out there that see FCS and they see the state of Montana out there, and they might glance towards it. They play some high quality football, both with the Grizzlies and with the Bobcats here, that they're going to be facing off with. They fell to North Dakota State in the national championship game last year. Remember, Idaho, I believe, was like ranked eighth or ninth in the FCS. Montana State will be ranked higher than that to start things off. But I kind of like how this works for them, because it's not a complete pushover. Oklahoma State is another interesting team, because they got a ton of transfers. They won a grand total of zero Big 12 games last year. It was a little bit weird to kind of look up and see that with a Mike Gundy football team, but I don't know if either of those games are going to be complete pushovers. I would expect Oregon to win them by, you know, two touchdowns, three touchdowns plus, possibly. But I think, you know, with some of these younger pieces, look what happened last year, specifically with the offensive line. And you got four new guys on the offensive line. Speak of the devil of that group. But I think, yeah, defense, offense with so many new pieces. I don't know if I'd expect Oregon to put up, you know, the numbers they put up like against Portland State a few years ago, putting up an 80 spot or whatever against them. You know, this thing might take a little bit to get started, like the old lawnmower. Might take a couple of pulls for the engine to really get revving a little bit. But your goal is you want to take Montana State, you want to take Oklahoma State, Oregon State, Northwestern, that group of games. You want to be able to figure it out, so when you go into Happy Valley game 5, you're starting to really figure out, okay, who are our main contributors? Who can we rely on in really key spots? I think that's what you want to be able to figure out during these first couple of games.
Ted LaRue joining us, Ted on the Ducks on socials. Now, like you mentioned, you've covered the Big Ten as well. You've got a pulse on the landscape of college football. Yep. What's your pecking order in this conference? Looks like the media has Penn State to win, uh-huh. Ohio State, and then Oregon third. Do you see it similarly, or is there any other team in the conference that you might be think it could be a surprise contender this year?
Well, those are the three. Those are the big boys at the top, is Penn State, Ohio State, and Oregon. I think there's certainly other teams, right? The Big Ten had four playoff teams last season. I think there's teams that can get into the playoff, obviously. But I just don't see them at the talent level of those. Right now, Penn State is kind of in that mold of like Michigan was in 23, Ohio State was in 2024, where it's just like their return. They've kind of had some losses where it's like, oh, that it's stung and it's stuck with them for a while. And now you got everybody coming back. Right? It was that way for Michigan. It was certainly that way with the experience coming back for Ohio State last year. Now for Penn State, you got Drew Aller coming back yet again at quarterback. You got those two running backs. You've got, I think it's like three starters up front on the offensive line that was pretty good last year that are coming back. They've got certainly some great players coming back on the defensive side of the ball to go out there and get Jim Knowles as their coordinator. Like, all the chips are in, and we kind of know the deal with Penn State, right? James Franklin hasn't been able to win a lot of these big games, okay? If it's been Ohio State, if it's been Michigan, you know, for the most part, they don't come out on the winning end. They haven't beat Ohio State since 2016, and that was kind of on a blocked field goal, kind of fluky type of thing in Happy Valley. So, you know, that's, I think, what everybody looks at the roster and be like, that's a really good Penn State roster. But then they have in the back of their mind, okay, James Franklin is their head coach, and these are the things that have happened in the past a little bit as well. I look at Ohio State. I think they got the best players in the country on offense and defense. Jeremiah Smith on offense is just an absolute freakazoid. And then on defense is Caleb Downs. Like you saw what Caleb did on that play against Texas, forcing that 6 or 7 yard loss and eventually the Jack Sawyer fumble in the semifinals against the Horns. But man, it's just like they lose a lot. Yeah, I want to make that perfectly clear. We'd be sitting here for a while if we would be talking about the players they're losing. But it's Ohio State, man. I mean, they recruit like Oregon does. Top five classes. They got five stars at the backup role, the third string role. So they're going to find players. But I think with them, with Chip Kelly last year, they really invested kind of a little bit more into that run game with that duo back there. But I think like this year with Hartline, who is their wide receivers coach, who's now going to be their offensive coordinator, I think they're going to throw it around, and I think they're going to throw it around a lot. And you know, you look at the running back room, it's fine, but it's certainly not as good as last year. Other contenders, to answer your question in a very, very roundabout way, Illinois they've been getting a lot of praise. They've got a very manageable schedule on there as well. And that's another team where everybody's coming back, right? Indiana is another team that I think is a really good team, might have a better roster, but they play much more difficult games this season, right? They got to come to Eugene is one of them. They got to go to Penn State. That's another one of those games. Michigan, another team that has a very manageable schedule. How good is Bryce Underwood in his true freshman season? You know, we're certainly going to find out there. So those are like three other teams that I could see maybe pushing for that playoff spot. Could there be other surprise teams? Yeah, there certainly could, but it's going to be another deep league for college football's best conference.
He hosts that show out west, the podcast about that team out west, the Oregon Ducks, with On3 Network and Scoop Duck contributor as well, Ted LaRue. Ted, let the people know where they can find your stuff and what kind of cadence are you starting to ramp up toward as we get closer to football season.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram at Ted on the Ducks out there on YouTube and the audio podcast platforms. It's that show out west, as you mentioned, of course, for that team out west. And man, once we get into the season, once we dial it up, once we kick it into gear, we're going to be doing a show previewing the opponent. We're going to be doing a recap show, certainly, as well. And then live on Saturdays following the game, we're going to have that post-game show out west live on YouTube. So I'm excited about that, taking calls from Duck fans. It's going to be a hell of a time. I'm excited. I'm ready to go. I might just go outside and run a few 40s myself. So, I'm ready. I'm ready for some Duck football. It's going to be a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me.
Love your energy, man. Thanks for popping on with us. We appreciate it.
All right, sounds good.
Here is Ted LaRue joining us on the Boldface Truth. We'll wrap things up on the show coming up next. Judah, we filling in Boldface Truth, 750 The Game of the BFT Radio Network.